This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars Episode 61 was recorded on September 23rd, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. All-Star Danielle DiMartino Booth is back with us again today. Danielle, it's great to have you back. I want to talk about the Federal Reserve because we've done several interviews about this repo blow-up that occurred last week. And one of the things that Jeff Snyder told us is he said, look, the Fed doesn't show any outward signs of really understanding how this stuff works. The way Jeff described it was they don't really speak the language of the market anymore. Now, that's a pretty strong accusation to make about an organization that's charged with basically being in charge of the global economy. It's not quite the global economy, but in effect, it really is. You've actually worked in the Federal Reserve. Is Jeff a little bit crazy to be saying that the Federal Reserve doesn't have a clue as to what's going on here, or is there substance to that accusation that Jeff is making?
Look, there was a time a few years ago when there were rumblings about Janet Yellen herself being attached to a leak to Medley. It was eventually sloughed off on another Federal Reserve president who it felt like, as a former insider, it felt like they'd set him up for as a fall guy. But the point is, there was a time very recently that internally at the Fed, they said, maybe speaking to market players is not the best idea. Well, that's a slippery slope because you've got to get your reconnaissance from those who are in the trenches. And at that time, you know, when I was there, for example, I literally was on trading floors in New York City talking to all of the market players, buy side, sell side, economists, investment officers, you name it, and bringing all of that back to the Fed. The Fed has to be in possession of that knowledge because making monetary policy is not just about economic data that is seasonally adjusted. You have to be aware of, intimately in touch with what is happening in the markets. And I think one reflection of how out of touch today's current Fed is was Jay Powell's insistence on placing John Williams at the New York Fed. And I think that right now what we're seeing with this repo fiasco is the outgrowth of having somebody who is a pure academic running the financial system of, as you said, the planet.
Danielle, where in your mind specifically is John Williams' lapse of judgment? If we're saying, you know, these academics aren't qualified, why aren't they qualified? What's wrong? What are they doing wrong? What should they be doing differently?
Well, so there was a time around when John Williams dismissed, ousted Simon Potter, the architect, engineer, designer of quantitative easing, the only person in the House who knows exactly where the bodies are buried. There was a time that John Williams made this ouster that it was patently apparent that the Fed was going to step back from quantitative tightening and ergo at some point be considering once again being in an easing mode, quantitative easing. You don't dismiss the person who designs quantitative easing knowing that you're about to go through a massive change in policy and how policy is undertaken. You just don't do it. And now we know, and we've heard from other insiders that not only as Bloomberg reported, did John Williams not have the speech that he made, it's been months now, in front of an FOMC meeting that implied that they were going to do a 50 basis point rate cut. Not only did he not vet the speech to the markets desk, it's worse than what Bloomberg reported. He did run the speech by those on the New York markets desk. And he was warned by them. And they're like, no, you cannot make this speech. You're going to confuse the markets. Right now, we're trying to form a unified front that it's just going to be a quarter point cut. You cannot make this speech, President Williams, period. And he still went off and did it. So, you know, this is a massive backfire on Powell's part, period, end, because you've now not, you know, you could say with this repo mess that, you know, that the inmates are running the asylum, but that would be an optimistic assessment. You've now got nobody running the asylum. And I think that this reality, that this fact has started to seep in with the very big banks that they regulate, and it's caused its own semblance of risk aversement at these big banks, because they know that the people running the desk that they're obligated to go back and forth with, they're obligated. These are primary dealers. I think that there's a sense of distrust with the very open market operations desk that they're obligated to deal with on a day-to-day basis. That's dangerous to me.
So what you're describing, Danielle, if I'm understanding you correctly, is not really, well, part of it is a misunderstanding of what's happening in the markets, but you're describing more of a management problem than a data interpretation problem. You're saying that really important people like John Williams are being told not to do things, and they're being forewarned in advance that there could be serious market adverse consequences if they go ahead with their plans. And despite those warnings, he's doing it anyway. And there's no accountability apparently, or, you know, punishment for that. Is this more of a management issue of how Powell is running the Fed as a manager, or is it a bigger issue of understanding of how markets work?
Right now, I think it's the former. I think that you hit the nail on the head. I think that you have a management issue, and I think it's become blatantly apparent. You saw Powell in his latest press conference reading his answers. That is how low confidence is right now inside of the institution, such that there is such a level of fear among the leadership at the Fed that they want to make sure that the message is actually literally scripted, because they know that there have been mistakes that have been made, and now they're in a damage control kind of a stance, and that is not where you want to be while you have complete and total upheaval in overnight lending markets in the only risk-free rate on the planet that's positive. This is not the best time for there to be an extremely apparent look at the dot plots. There were three different directions that Fed policymakers wanted to go on that committee. There's not dissent inside the Fed right now. There's confusion.
Okay, so duly noted that we've got serious confusion and a management issue, but I still want to come back to the criticisms that Jeff Snyder has made with respect to whether or not they understand the problem. What Jeff has told us is that there is a global U.S. dollar liquidity squeeze, and that what is causing that liquidity squeeze globally is the fact that the way U.S. dollar liquidity has traditionally been addressed on an international basis is that international money center banks create U.S. dollar liquidity through the commercial eurodollar system. And Jeff's allegation is that the Fed doesn't understand that historically has been the mechanism that has supplied global liquidity of U.S. dollars, offshore U.S. dollars. And because they don't understand it, they're not watching the right signals, and they don't understand. The way Jeff described it is, hey, look, this repo shock has to do with U.S. dollar liquidity. And Jeff's been talking for well over a month on Macro Voices, effectively seeing this coming, saying, look, we've got really serious liquidity problems in the system, and the Fed doesn't understand how the market works because they're not in touch with what mechanisms actually supply U.S. dollar liquidity to the global financial system. Now, those are some awfully pointed and harsh criticisms of an organization that is literally, as you put it, being charged with the entire world's economy. Is Jeff justified in criticizing the Fed for not understanding how global U.S. dollar liquidity really works outside of the part that they administer domestically?
Well, let's go back to business law 101 from business school. There's something called prima facie evidence. And to Jeff's contention, and don't get me wrong, Jeff understands the euro dollar system and its intricacies way better than I do. I'm still learning from everything that he has to say. But let's just say that Jeff is right. How could he not be, Eric? How could Jeff not be right? If this issue with dollar liquidity in offshore dollars has been percolating for as long as it has been, and Jeff has laid this out in great detail, then how could corporate tax payments that are known to be coming every single quarter and treasury issuance that is known to be settling, this is a calendar, you know, that they resolved the debt ceiling issue. They knew that they had to restock the nation's checking account, so to speak, at the Treasury. How could known knowns create the utter havoc they created if the Fed didn't realize the other part of the puzzle that was offshore was not exacerbating the situation? At his press conference, Jay Powell contended that he absolutely, and the New York Fed and the open market operations desk, that they all saw what was coming. They knew what was happening. But to Jeff's point, clearly they only knew half of the picture, because if they knew the entire picture, then they would not have been completely sideswiped by what happened in the repo market.
When Jay Powell told us in the press conference, look, these are just technicalities, you know, you have some seasonality bottlenecks that occur near the end of the quarter. This is technicality stuff. It's transient. It's not a big deal. It's nothing to worry about, everybody. The fact that we had this 10% spike in the repo rate. Is that because Jay Powell actually believes that nonsense, or is it because Jay Powell knows that he's in a position where he has to provide confidence, and even though he's perhaps scared to death, he needs to pretend that they're on top of it and that this is nothing to worry about? Do you think they're buying their own BS, frankly?
Eric, I think it's a little bit of both. I think that there is a will on Jay Powell's part to believe that this is going to be a $75 billion hiccup, and that it's going to go away as of October the 10th. And they're going to be able to say, see, look, we resolved this liquidity issue. That's the absolute best case scenario. If they don't understand that this is more of an end of cycle colliding with a confidence crisis, if they don't understand that potential and that is what banks are communicating, they've got huge problems on their hands. Look, Lehman was an event that occurred mid-month. This is, as far as I'm concerned, September the 16th is not the end of a quarter. It's the middle of a month that ends the quarter. But this is an eruption that occurred before the end of September. This is not pure window dressing. If Powell doesn't understand that, we've got much bigger problems on our hands right now. If they're drinking their own Kool-Aid and deluding themselves into believing that this is not a bigger issue, they need to be approaching this as if internally somebody has signaled DEFCON 1. Now, they can exude confidence externally all they want. They can put great optics out there to say, we've got everything under control. But internally, they sure as hell had better be treating this as if something seriously has gone wrong.
Danielle, let's tie this all together now. Final question. Bring this Fed stuff back to the real economy. Maybe we're seeing some green shoots in the economy. Are things getting better, or do we still really need to be worried about the global growth slowdown eventually catching up with the U.S.?
So look, let's boil this repo thing down to where the rubber hits the road. It will matter. Liquidity becomes a serious issue if the real underlying economy slows down. And I think that one of the reasons that Powell was able to exude the confidence that he did at his latest press conference is that we did see a pop up in industrial production. Manufacturing industrial production in this country is positive year over year on a net-net basis, simply because auto production is positive. Where's that headed? That was a rhetorical question. You know, we've seen some bounce back in residential real estate in this country. It took 100 basis point, you know, decline in yields and mortgage rates to get there. We should have seen a hell of a lot more, but we have seen definitely a little bit of a comeback. But look, we have still got, you know, chip shipments out of South Korea down 40% year over year. The situation in Germany is not getting any better. You know, the most recent market services survey here in the United States, where it matters the most, because apparently this is liquidity crisis central, fell to the lowest level since 2010, new orders when they started taking the survey for the first time. Again, I just said services sector. I didn't say industrials recession. So we're seeing seepage, the latest JOLTS report, the job openings report. Services job openings were at the lowest level of the past 12 months. If we continue to see seepage into the services sector here in the United States and abroad and in China, where they're quote unquote allowing GDP to be reported with a five handle, if there's continued weakening in the macroeconomic backdrop, then these liquidity issues will continue to be much more impactful, because it is not just overnight liquidity in the repo market that matter. It is the intersection of macroeconomic data and liquidity. That's where confidence is built or torn down. And my greatest concern is that these green shoots are going to be very temporary in nature, and that we're going to go back to being on recession watch globally and here in the United States as the calendar starts to matter even more headed into year end. The Fed has got a Band-Aid on this puppy until October the 10th. Let's see what happens afterwards, given the macroeconomic backdrop. If things continue to worsen, then boy, Jay Powell's got some issues on his hand, and it is going to be quite the unhappy Halloween when the Fed is next expected to start taking rates down again or not. We'll see.
Danielle, you just said it's so important to watch the macro backdrop. That's a very broad picture. Can you be a little more specific? What specifically should listeners be watching for as a sign that maybe things are about to turn south?
So I've written about it extensively. You've got a feather up on your website right now that speaks to it. As long as credit volatility is contained, then all of the sins of the current cycle will not come back to haunt us. But it's when overnight liquidity starts to seep into longer term confidence in the credit markets that you should be really, really raising those red flags. As long as the Merrill Lynch MOVE, M-O-V-E index is contained, I think we're okay. But you know, the credit side of S&P has just put a fresh report out, and the amount of chicanery done in M&A and LBO transactions is something that can be smoothed over apparently ad infinitum, as long as liquidity remains abundant and conspicuous. If that's not the case, it is game over. So I would recommend to all of your listeners, heck with the VIX, forget the VIX. Don't follow the VIX, but follow the MOVE index. Follow credit volatility like a hawk, because that is where you're going to see the first tell in terms of a liquidity issue colliding with a macroeconomic issue. And that becomes Jay Powell's worst nightmare if you start to see credit volatility tick up, Eric. That's my final word.
And we have the inventor of the MOVE Index, Harley Bassman, on this week's Thursday Night Macro Voices podcast for the feature interview. But Danielle, you mentioned that we have a feather up for any new listeners who may not recognize that reference. We're, of course, speaking about your Daily Feather newsletter. We had a sample issue from a couple weeks ago. Since you just mentioned it, we'll publish a new link. So if you haven't gotten that free download yet, it's a sample of Danielle's newsletter. You can find the download link next to Danielle's picture in the description of today's article. Danielle, for any new listeners who aren't familiar, please give us just the quick thumbnail. What's the Daily Feather, and tell us the rest about what you do at Quill Intelligence.
So at Quill Intelligence, we've launched a research revolution. It's our hashtag, research revolution. And the Daily Feather endeavors to keep you up to date with the intersection of economics and the markets. The one that you're putting up, Noise Silencing Policy, asks and answers the question, does leverage matter anymore? And the goal of the daily is to keep you absolutely ready for every trading day, every day that the markets open. The weekly Quill is a much deeper, intensive dive into the intricacies and some of the bigger picture items that are pushing markets and economies. That's our institutional product. You can find everything you need to know at quillintelligence.com. And in the event that you're bored and you need to get out more, for heaven's sake, follow me on Twitter at DMartino Booth.
Danielle, thanks so much for another great interview. We look forward to getting you back in a couple of weeks for another update. And again, listeners, you can find a download link for a sample of the Daily Feather on our website at macrovoices.com next to Danielle's picture in the description of today's interview. Be sure to stay tuned to Macro Voices this week. We've got Professor Steve Keen coming up, also talking about the repo blowup. We've also got Energy Week with Anas Alhaji, Pat Hemsworth, and Art Berman is back from vacation. And we've got the inventor of the Move Index, Harley Bassman, on the Thursday night Macro Voices podcast. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly research roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.